ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
International Affairs.
I wonder what you consider to be the great stories of the second half of the 20th century. The civil rights movement in the 1960s, France's decolonisation of West Africa in the 1950s, the Watergate scandal in the 1970s, the end of the Cold War in the 1990s. Many of us would remember that. Imagine bearing witness to all of those events. Well, one woman did. Her name was Hella Pick, and she spent over 30 years as a foreign correspondent with The Guardian newspaper in an era where men dominated journalism. Hella passed away early this month at the age of 96. She was a pioneer of her time and served as an inspiration to many women who came after her, including Emma Graham Harrison, who's followed in Hella's footsteps and is herself an international correspondent for The Guardian. She was lucky enough to call Hella a friend and joins us now from her current posting in Jerusalem. Emma, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello, good evening. It's lovely to be here talking about Hella. It's great to have a chance to remember this amazing woman.
She was an amazing woman, wasn't she? I mean, Jerusalem's in the thick of foreign news at the moment, obviously, and I'll ask you about that in a moment. But let's talk about Hella first. Amazing woman, a journalist and a presence. There was a good 50 years between yourself and Hella in age, but you struck up a friendship with her only 3 years ago. How so?
So, I mean, one of the things I love about Hella was the fact that at 92 she was still making new friends. I was actually sent to interview her by The Guardian for a piece for an anniversary sort of series we were doing where like young journalists interviewed their sort of famous predecessors, or relatively young, I'm not that young. And I was lucky enough to be assigned Hella. So I went to meet her. It was the first in-person interview either of us had done since for many months because of COVID. And she invited me to her house, and I just went round there, and what began as an interview turned into this long conversation that turned into this wonderful friendship that was such a gift, and I feel so lucky to have had.
Yeah, I mean, look, her own personal life was like a copy of, you know, the history of some of the worst parts of the 20th century, wasn't it? She was an Austrian Jew sent to England when she was 11. She was part of the Kinder transport, wasn't she? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so her family had to escape or tried to escape Vienna, where she'd grown up until she was 11, after the Nazis took over. They weren't able to leave together. Her mother sent her first on the Kinder transport, which is remembered as a rescue project, but in a way was very cruel because it allowed only children to leave. Their parents had to stay behind.
Yeah.
Her mother did make it to the UK 3 months later, but her beloved grandmother died in a concentration camp, or rather was shipped to a concentration camp, and there's no further records of her, so it's assumed that she died in the concentration camp. They spent many years looking for her. And when she got to London on her own, aged 11, she only spoke one word of English. So she met the family, the foster family, who were going to take her in, and she said goodbye to them. That was her word.
Yeah, I know. It was, as you say, it was seen as a way of helping people, but terribly cruel in its own way. All of these young children who were put on trains, essentially with a small suitcase, and sent to England and were fostered there, and in many cases never saw their families again, did they?
Indeed, indeed. You know, she was lucky that her mother did make it, but obviously there's the tragedy that her grandmother was murdered.
Mm. She was unusual, a young woman reporting from foreign hotspots. Here she is speaking in 2018 when she was interviewed on the BBC's Desert Island Discs program about her life, recounting her very first job as a foreign correspondent.
My very first job was mostly in West Africa. We're going back now to 1958, 59, and I was virtually the only European woman journalist covering that whole field. So obviously I was young, I was quite good looking, everybody was running after me, but in the nicest possible way. I got to know all the leaders of West Africa, and I had a very good time. And the handful of European male journalists took me in and treated me as a comrade.
Yeah. This is all at the time. It's an era in which, you know, there was a lot of sexism and misogyny around, let's face it. Did she beat the boys at their own game, or did she join them, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think she was someone whose whole life just involved fighting adversity. You know, first of all, escaping the Nazis, the Jew, then making her way in a profession that was so male-dominated. And I think part of her nature was to sort of play down what she'd achieved. But, you know, she started as a journalist at a time when the British Foreign Office said to her, you can't come to briefings because you're a woman. They didn't even have to try and think up an excuse. And, you know, she'd go to sort of dinner parties, which is where a lot of diplomatic foreign correspondents, you'd mingle with diplomats, you know, sort of senior politicians. And those are the days when the women left the room and the men stayed at the table for port and cigars. And they'd say to her, like, okay, off you go. So she'd be sent off with the wives of all the people she wanted to talk to, and her competitors, the diplomats of the sources, all stayed there together to have these discussions. So she had a pretty tough time of it, but it was in her nature to sort of focus on the positive and really play down the ways in which she was, a real groundbreaker and sort of paved the way to make things a lot easier for those of us who came after her.
Well, exactly. People such as yourself, in a way. I mean, there's almost a direct line here, isn't there? I'm speaking with Emma Graham-Harrison, who's a senior international affairs correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer. She's currently posted in Jerusalem. We'll talk about that in a moment. We're remembering the life and times of Hella Pick, one of the great pioneering foreign correspondents and pioneer for women in journalism as well. Tell us the story about Hella's first day as The Guardian's Washington correspondent in 1963. Her predecessor had left her in quite a predicament, hadn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's sort of hard to really understand now, what he'd done for her. I think he was jealous, worried, who knows exactly, wanted to sort of hobble her. And he cleaned out all the archives of newspaper cuttings, all the reference books, that was basically, you know, the 1960s equivalent of Google. If you wanted to remember what year was it that a certain person was elected president or that something happened, you know, there was no internet. You had to go to your archives and look up what other journalists had written or find the history books. And she turned up and she had none of that. So basically she had what was in her head and her other talents. And so being Hella, she reached out to all her many, many, you know, fascinating, glamorous diplomats, sort of cultural figures, civil rights leader friends. One of them threw a huge party for her. All these people turned up. The Washington Post agreed to open its own archives for her so she could use those. And, you know, it was a very Hella response. Somebody did something to her that a lesser person would be absolutely devastated by. And she just thought, well, here's this obstacle. I've got to find a way around it. And she did in a sort of fun, creative, you know, undaunted way.
Yes, well, anyway, raise a glass for her. Hella Pick, a total trailblazer in journalism, and particularly for women. Thanks for those memories, Emma. Emma, look, let's talk about your current posting. I mean, very much at the heart of world events at the moment. You're in Jerusalem. What's the feeling in the city with the current tensions following the Iranian missile and drone attack?
I'm just here on assignment. I'm not posted here permanently. But certainly, you know, Saturday night was, if you're based in Jerusalem, you know, you could hear the sound of the missiles being intercepted. You could see the sort of intercepted fragments falling through the sky, although some people slept through it all. I went out the next day to do a piece for The Guardian, just reporting how people were feeling in Jerusalem after this night. You know, the attack had been threatened for a long time. It was unclear what the scale of it would be. It did turn out to be a very large attack, but, you know, most of it was intercepted. And the feeling, you know, what I picked up, my report was very much people on the ground in Jerusalem. They felt relieved that the air defense, which had been mounted by Israel and its allies, had been so effective. And they very much hoped that this would be the end of it. Iran was retaliating for an Israeli strike on the Iranian diplomatic compound in Damascus. And so most people here were saying they really hoped that would be the end of it. And, you know, the prospect of an escalation to a greater war is obviously a very alarming one.
Yes, exactly. Although the Iranian attack wasn't lethal, there's great uncertainty, isn't there, as to what is likely to happen next, because Israel has basically said, well, we are going to strike back in some way.
Yeah, I mean, there was one casualty, a young Bedouin girl who I believe was 7, who was in a village which, because it's not recognised by the Israeli state, doesn't have an air raid shelter.
Oh, dear.
And because of that, they had nowhere to hide. So she wasn't actually hit by the missile, but fragments of the missile fell and injured her very badly. And she was in intensive care. So there was, but yes, considering there was a barrage of over 100 ballistic missiles, dozens of cruise missiles, I think 300 drones, that's a very low casualty rate. But Israel has said that because of the scale of the attack, that it will respond. It said, it's not revealed how or where it's going to respond. We've seen a lot of diplomatic efforts by, it's not just people in Jerusalem who are concerned about escalation. We've also seen from, the US, the UK, we've had the British Foreign Secretary was here yesterday, David Cameron, his German counterpart, talking to the Israelis, discussing the nature of any response and really urging them to do something that would not lead to further escalation.
Mm.
And the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that he will, he appreciates the advice, but Israel will make its own decision.
Yes.
So, they're waiting to see what that's going to mean.
Indeed. Indeed. All right, Emma, appreciate your time. I really do. And thank you very much for it.
No, thank you for inviting me here and for celebrating Hela. It's an honour to know her, and I'm glad that your listeners are getting to hear a tiny bit about her extraordinary life. So thank you.
Thanks, Emma. Emma Graham-Harrison, Senior International Affairs Correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer, with some memories of Hela Pick, a great pioneering journalist, as she set out.
Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.